सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादम् शङ्करं लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवं बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेदि मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। The topic of discussion is freedom in relationship. Freedom is what we naturally love, because freedom happens to be our nature, and therefore there is a natural love for freedom. But very often the relationships seem to bind us. Sometimes relationships do not allow us to experience the freedom which is our true nature, and therefore this topic of freedom in relationships. How to enjoy the freedom while relating to others? Or better, how to make the relationships an occasion to discover the freedom, how we can make relationships a basis for our self-growth, that we grow in the direction of freedom and ultimately enjoy the freedom that is our nature. So let us understand what it is that I am talking about. Relationship is between two persons. I am the one who is relating to others. Can be one person or more persons, but let's say relationship is between two persons where I as an individual interact with another individual. In the relationships that we are most interested in exploring is the relationship with other human beings, because that seems to be the most difficult thing, most challenging thing. Relating to other human beings is a great challenge. Why is it so? Well, first of all, look at myself, who is the one who relates to others. Before we come to relationships as such, let us understand the I or the self who relates to others. Who am I? Who am I right now? I am an individual self. You can say I am the ego, the individual self. And who is the ego? Who am I? I am the one who feels a sense of limitation. I feel being limited, being inadequate. So I see myself as an inadequate being. I see myself as a limited being. I see myself as a needy being. I see myself as in need. Need of what? Need of being accepted by the world. Need of being approved by the world. Need of being loved by the world. That needy being is what I am right now. Because I have a perception about myself. Each one of us has a perception about the self. It is natural to have a perception about ourselves, or an opinion about ourselves. Because we are self-conscious beings, we are conscious of the world outside ourselves, as well as conscious of ourselves. In a way, other creatures also are conscious. They are also conscious of the world other than them. They are also conscious of themselves. But then, their self-consciousness is not as evolved as the self-consciousness is in the case of a human being. I guess a dog also knows that it's a dog. It may not use the word dog, but it knows what it is. Therefore, when it comes to other dogs, the dog relates in a certain way. When it comes to a cat, the dog relates in a different way. So dog seems to know that this is a cat or someone else, somebody else. If it's another dog, it may start barking, it may start playing or whatever. Even though the animals and the creatures also seem to have some kind of self-consciousness by which they recognize their own species, they recognize other species, and as they are programmed to relate, they relate in a certain way. So that kind of self-consciousness is there. There are some natural instincts that all living beings have. Appeasing hunger, aharam, is one instinct. Nidra, sleep when you are tired, another instinct. Bhaya, fear, protecting yourself from others, self-preservation, another instinct. Maithunam, procreation, sense gratification, is another instinct. So all creatures seem to have that amount of consciousness about themselves and consciousness about fulfilling these basic instincts. That's about all. But in a way, other creatures are fortunate that they do not have a self-opinion. They do not have a self-complex. As the Swami used to say always, that a cow with a shapely horn does not feel that it is superior to a cow with broken horns. That I am more beautiful, this cow is less beautiful. A cow that gives 5 liters milk, as against another cow that gives 1 liter milk, that cow giving 1 liter milk doesn't feel inferior to the cow giving 5 liters. It doesn't feel that I am inferior in any way. Meaning that the sense of inferiority, superiority, all of these seem to be absent in other creatures. And therefore, they are free. They don't have any stresses. They don't have any needs. no egoistic needs. They may have emotional needs, all right, to some extent, but no egoistic needs. That I should be respected by others, I should be approved by others, I should be accepted by others, I should be superior to somebody else, I should not be inferior to somebody else. This kind of egoistic complexes or needs other creatures do not seem to have. It is the egoistic needs only that create all the stresses and all the sadness also. And therefore, human being is the only one who is subject to being sad or unhappy. Human being has all the variety of complexes, that I'm superior, I'm inferior, I'm good, I'm not good, I'm right, I'm wrong, I'm successful, I'm failure. All of these kind of complexes, self-opinions, or you can say the perception about the self, only human being has. Therefore, I am a very complex person, not a simple person. A person entertaining a number of complexes about herself is a complex person. And I relate to other human beings who also are very complex persons. Say, dog is a simple creature. Another dog is a simple creature. They can relate to each other easily. Simple people can relate to other simple people in a very easy manner. But every human being is a very complex being. And that is what makes these relationships somewhat very difficult. So therefore, before we talk of relationship, it is important to understand who it is that is relating to others. A complex person is relating. A person who has an opinion about himself, who has the conclusions about himself, who entertains a variety of complexes about himself, therefore who has a lot of needs. Emotional needs are there, egoistic needs are there, intellectual needs are there, sensuous needs are there, all kinds of needs the human being has. Therefore, he has an agenda. As a human being, I have an agenda. What's agenda? Agenda is that I want to fulfill my variety of needs. The sensuous needs are there, I want to fulfill them. Emotional needs are there, I want to fulfill them. Intellectual needs are there, I want to fulfill them. Egoistic needs are there, I want to fulfill them. That being the case, whenever I relate to the world, I generally relate with an agenda. I have an agenda all the time. What's the agenda? How to use the world, how to use the relationship in order to fulfill my agenda, so that I can fulfill my needs. This is a needy person always relates to others with an agenda of fulfilling the needs. And therefore, I usually look upon others as means of fulfilling my needs. Thus, whenever I interact with somebody, the thought in my mind is, how can I use this person to fulfill my need? That's my first thought. And very often, therefore, I manipulate also my relationship in a manner that I fulfill my needs. So this is I who is relating to other people. Unfortunately, the one with whom I am relating also is a similarly complex person who has his or her own agenda. And agenda is very simple, fulfilling the needs. Agenda is very simple. What is my basic need? I want to be happy. And therefore, seeking to fulfill the agenda, my agenda, of being a happy person. And I use every interaction as a means of fulfilling their agenda. This is what we are. And that is why in every relationship there is an expectation, naturally. Because I have an agenda. My agenda is to be happy. My agenda is to fulfill my needs. And therefore, I relate to others also with an expectation as to how that person should fulfill my needs. So I look upon you, with whom I relate, as a person or as a means of fulfilling my needs. You look upon me as a means of fulfilling your needs. So that is where the ground for conflict is created. If my needs are such that they contradict with your needs, if your needs are such that they contradict with my needs, then there are conflicts. Thus, our needs manifest as what we call raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes. Each one of us is nothing but a bunch of likes and dislikes. And therefore, one packet of likes and dislikes relates to another packet of likes and dislikes and variety of complexes. And therefore, it is a very complex situation. So then, we come to what we call the freedom in relationship. What is bondage in relationship? When relationship causes a stress in me. Relationship causes disappointment in me. Relationship causes frustration in me. That is what we call the bondage in relationship. When relationship causes freedom in me, happiness in me, we call it the freedom in relationship. So when a relationship causes happiness in me, which is what we want, call it the freedom in relationship. When relationship becomes a means of causing stress and strain and sorrow or unhappiness in me, we will call it the bondage in relationship. So that is why the freedom in relationship becomes a very relevant topic. Because who are we? We as human beings are always related. As I said last night also, when our Swami asked this question, what is living? Living, is it simply breathing? Not really. Because we breathe even when we are fast asleep. We breathe even when we are in coma. And therefore, simply breathing cannot be called living. Living is when I interact. Living is when I relate. Because our life is nothing but a series of relationships. From the time that we wake up in the morning, to the time that we go to sleep, we keep on relating to the world. And how many relationships are there? Constantly I come across different people, and thus I relate to them all in different ways. Therefore, my life is nothing but a series of relationships. And therefore, I must learn how to relate. Meaning I must learn how to relate in such a manner that every relationship yields me a sense of satisfaction, a sense of happiness. So what does this agenda create? Ragas and dveshas, likes and dislikes. Whenever I feel that there is someone who will fulfill my agenda, there is a like or attachment for that one. When I feel that someone is antagonistic to my agenda, there is a dislike for that one, and therefore my relations are all basically based on likes and dislikes. When am I happy? I'm happy when my likes and dislikes are fulfilled. You know, when a married couple, a newly married couple in the olden days would come to a Swamiji and ask Swamiji, what is the duty? We are married now, what's the duty of the husband, what's the duty of wife? Swami would say a very simple thing. The duty of husband is to make the wife happy. Duty of wife is to make the husband happy. Very simple statement. Whether it is simple to do or not is a different thing. Because when can we make somebody happy? When we fulfill the likes and dislikes. When am I happy? I become happy when my likes and dislikes are satisfied. Meaning that when you do what I like you to do, and when you avoid doing what I do not want you to do, then I am happy. So then for a husband to make the wife happy, very simple. Husband should do what the wife likes to do and avoid doing what she doesn't like. Which should, if it's both ways, wife also does what the husband likes to do and doesn't do what husband doesn't like to do, life would be wonderful. In India, what used to happen is generally it was a one-way relationship. Wife always did what the husband liked and did not do what the husband did not like. The husband had the freedom to do whatever he wanted to do. Usually it went on, you know, because generally wife is a non-demanding creature in that male-dominated society. So wife is usually a non-demanding creature, or at least the demands are not entertained. So I guess somehow the life goes on. That does not mean, you know, so Indians pride themselves in saying that, look, in India, the rate of divorce is next to nothing. Naturally. Because poor woman has no freedom, no economic freedom, no social freedom. Economically, she is still dependent upon the husband. Socially also, this society does not accept a woman. They don't mind a man, I guess, but they don't accept a woman who is rejected. Even her parents would not accept her. The parents may accept, but now there is a brother and a brother's wife is there, and therefore this poor woman cannot go home because now she has to contend with a sister-in-law and stuff like that. She is totally trapped. There was no choice. Therefore she puts up with whatever it is. So just because people put up with things, and therefore there are no divorces, Indians pride themselves in saying that our society is free of divorce, which is good, of course. So no divorce is better than having divorce. So at least the family is together, the children are there, and everything works out all right. But that does not mean that people are happy. Happiness is a different thing. Happiness is when there is harmony. Happiness is when there is, I say, the feeling of acceptance. Happiness is when there is a feeling of being loved. That is when the happiness is. And it's only in a rare case that thing happens. It would happen if the husband makes a commitment to make the wife happy, and wife makes a commitment to make husband happy. Meaning that the wife makes sure that she does what the husband likes and does not do what he does not like. He does not like Kerala, she doesn't cook. Even though she may like, you know. So sometimes she may like something this fellow doesn't like. Sometimes the other way around. This poor fellow liked Kerala. His wife did not like. So she would never cook. Sometimes he would ask, say, you know, how come there is no Kerala? They are not cooking. He says, no, there is, you know, you don't get good Kerala in the market, this, that, and all. They are all ripe and no good. Somehow, you would never get to eat Kerala. It's only when the blood test was carried out and they discovered that he had diabetes, and then the Ayurvedic physician advised him to eat Kerala every day. Now he comes and says, this is what the doctor has said. Now she has to cook. Now he gets his Kerala. But otherwise, they manipulate. You know, everybody manipulates in such a manner as to fulfill their own likes and dislikes. So interesting. It is not that man always dominates. He may dominate physically and stuff like that. There are many ways of dominating, you know. So what equation goes on inside the alone? No, we do not know outside. Outwardly it may look like he is dominating person, but inward we don't know. But unfortunately this is how everybody tries to dominate, tries to manipulate. What it means is that we keep ourselves intact as we are, we retain our likes and dislikes as we are, and always try to fulfill our likes and dislikes. If they do not get fulfilled in the normal course, we manipulate. We very often dominate. We demand that you fulfill my likes and dislikes. So whoever is dominating, his or her likes and dislikes get fulfilled, other person has to always give in. And there is a lot of hurt. In India also, in women also, a lot of hurt builds up. In India, there's another thing also. There's this duty. Everybody is duty bound. So they fulfill the duty. This poor daughter-in-law who just come to the family has duty towards her husband and her daughter in mind and sister-in-law and mother-in-law and father-in-law and this and that, and you know. Constantly seeking to fulfill the duty. She may do apparently sincerely, but inwardly there is a lot of resistance. Inwardly there is a lot of protest. For the simple reason is that in fulfilling those duties, her own needs are not fulfilled. So this is where the problem is. That in pleasing somebody else, when I am displeased, that is when the problem is. If I am pleased in pleasing somebody else, it's wonderful. If husband is pleased in pleasing wife, and wife is pleased in pleasing husband, wonderful. But if that is not so, wife is displeased in the process of pleasing husband, and vice versa. So that is when the hurts, they all pile up. And therefore, in freedom in relationship is to understand each other and recognize that each one has a need. Each one is a bundle of emotions. Everybody brings their own baggage. Baggage of all kinds of emotional needs. Baggage that people have picked up on account of their growth and bringing up. Baggage that we bring from our past births also. As far as we are concerned, we believe in the past births. We believe in future births. And therefore, we recognize that what we are today is the product of what it is that we did in the past. Never, every child that is born brings his or her baggage, which is from the past. The modern psychologists, since they do not accept the past births, they seek to explain our nature simply by what happened in the childhood and what the mother did and what the father did, etc. And that's how they seek to explain. And that's why all the blame goes to mother. For whatever the child is, all the blame goes to mother, poor mother. But she had problem because she had her own mother, and we had problem because her own mother. That's how it goes on. But we say that no, it is not mother or father, it is your own self. That you have brought your own baggage from the past. Of course, then mother and father also, they may add into that. That's a different matter. But then everybody brings that baggage. And baggage in terms of emotional needs, in terms of likes and dislikes. So if we use the relationship as a means of fulfilling likes and dislikes, then that is going to be definitely problems, because nobody can fulfill my likes and dislikes. Even if you want to, people are very kind to the Swami. They always want to fulfill his likes and dislikes. And therefore they do exactly what he likes. So, the other day I was invited for a bhiksha, and the hostess made sure, "Swamiji, no sweet today," because she knew that Swamiji doesn't eat sweets. But that was last year. She did not realize that by now my things have changed, you know. I said, "Who says I don't eat sweets? I eat sweets." Poor lady, so disappointed, you know. Because our likes and dislikes keep on changing. There is no fixity about them. What I like today, I may not like tomorrow. What I did not like yesterday, I may like today. Therefore, even if you are very sincere in fulfilling my likes and dislikes, you just do not know what they are. In particular, what the likes and dislikes are at this moment also, you may not know. Therefore, if my happiness depends upon my fulfillment of likes and dislikes, number one, I can rarely expect myself to be happy, because rarely my likes and dislikes will be fulfilled in a sustained manner. But that's what we expect. We are taken for granted that the only way of becoming happy is by fulfilling our likes and dislikes. And since I cannot fulfill my likes and dislikes, I want you to fulfill my likes and dislikes. And you may try, provided my likes and dislikes are fixed. Every 5 minutes they change. I'm a moody person, a fanciful person. Therefore, what I liked yesterday is different from what I like today. What I liked in the morning is different from what I like in the afternoon. And therefore, who can ever make me happy? Even God cannot make me happy. For God is trying his best to fulfill all my desires, you know. I make a desire and then God fulfills my desire and then I complain to him. So why did you do this to me? So whenever any pain comes in our life, we complain to God, "Why did you do this to me?" God says, "That's what you wanted." Because what we get is the outcome of what we wanted. God says, "I gave you what you wanted. Now you are complaining." Thus, our attempt to use our relationships to be happy, which is wonderful. The purpose of relationship is to be happy. In fact, we should know that it is said that 80% of our happiness comes from relationships. 80% of our happiness comes from fulfilling relationships. Only 20% of happiness comes from the baseball games and cinemas and pizzas and ice creams and stuff like that. All of that stuff contributes to 20% of the relationship. Happiness. 80% of the happiness comes from relationships. But we don't understand that. People sometimes do not realize how valuable relationships are. In fact, every relationship is very valuable. We are very fortunate that we are human beings and that we can relate to other people, we can relate to the world is something to be very happy about, that we are very fortunate. Dogs and cats have no relationship. They don't even realize, they recognize each other. They forget, there is no relationships. No other creature basically gets the joy of a relationship that a human being gets. Yeah, if perhaps a mother cat may enjoy her kittens for a period of time and then they forget each other. We have a sustained relationship the whole life. And therefore, we should recognize that relationships are extremely valuable things to have. And therefore, you must value every relationship. Of course, the relationship between a husband and wife is the most intimate relationship, and therefore the most valuable relationship. But then every other relationship also is very valuable. Even relationship to a child, relationship to a servant, relationship to everybody. To my employees, to my employer, to my colleagues, to my clients, to my suppliers, to my everybody. To my neighbors, let alone my family members. That every relationship can be a means of fulfillment. Every relationship can give me a joy and fulfillment. So, this person is writing Life of Dalai Lama. It's Art of Happiness. So, he's relating experiences with Dalai Lama. And he says, once they were going to a high-riser building for some kind of a meeting. And the elevator, and the elevator opened the entry, and then a maid servant was coming down. The way the Dalai Lama looked at this woman, the maid servant, was such that she became so happy. She became so happy just looking at Dalai Lama. She felt so accepted. She felt so loved that she just became very happy. So how, even with strangers also, we share our moments, and those moments also can be moments of joy, provided we relate with them in a proper manner. So first thing to understand in our life is that every relationship is extremely important. Number two, that a relationship cannot be taken for granted. It has to be nurtured and nourished. Just as when we sow a seed or when we are raising a plant, we cannot take it for granted that the plant will grow on its own. It will not. The plant requires the right amount of water, right amount of light, right amount of soil, right amount of fertilizer. Lot of care it requires support. How careful a good gardener is, how caring that gardener is when he's raising the plant. All of you know, because you raise up the plants in your homes, and you know how much care, even if Swami, look at our tulsi. So yesterday, this lady showing me, look at how beautiful it's growing. It gives such a happiness, you know, that tulsi plant is growing in my home. But it doesn't grow just like that. In United States or in Canada, for tulsi to grow, I guess you must make a lot of effort. For the orchids to grow, a lot of effort. Of course, when it grows and blossoms, there's a great joy, there's no doubt. In fact, even if the plant grows, every leaf that you find in there, it gives you joy. You always enjoy that growth of the plant. Meaning that it is a rewarding thing. So nurturing and nourishing and caring, even a plant, is rewarding right away because the plant also rewards me. Without really saying anything, the plant just by being fresh, by giving new little leaves, by giving birds, by giving flowers, by blossoming, it just blossoms my heart. And thus, this is the beauty about the thing, that every relationship is like that. That it has the capacity of nurturing and nourishing me also. Like a little child, an infant, all of you know. An infant doesn't do anything, doesn't talk. But how by its being there, it is so, you know, it just makes you so happy. You take care of that infant. In turn, the infant just loves you. The very eyes, the very face, the very gestures, all of these just reveal how happy that little child is. And it gives you such a satisfaction. So, every relationship can be a source of a great satisfaction. And that is the purpose of every relationship. Human being is very fortunate that he can relate to others. He can relate to other human beings. Of course, you relate to many things. You relate to nature also. You relate to your pets also. You relate to your home. You relate to your car. You relate to many, many things also. Relate to your furniture. Relate to your... Everything can give you happiness. But then most happiness can come from living beings, because living beings can express emotions. Living beings can express also a sense of satisfaction, which gives in turn the satisfaction. So really, when can relationship give me happiness? If you know this basic rule, that the best way of getting happiness is by making another one happy. All mothers know the joy of feeding. All children know the joy of eating. As children, of course, we realize, knew the joy of eating. When some good dish is cooked, then you eat and you wipe out everything, wipe off everything, leaving nothing for this poor mother. And we never thought about mother, we never thought that she also needed to eat, nothing at all, that she was a human being, nor did she think. While she makes something and she serves us and we wipe out everything, she doesn't leave anything aside for herself. That's a stupid one. Mothers are stupid creatures because they do not leave anything for themselves. Later when I grew up, then I realized that my mother was so stupid that she never kept anything for herself. I said, when I become mother, which I would never, of course, but if I become mother, first thing is I would leave something out for myself. And then, from the rest only, I would serve the children. That's not mother. Mother would not do that. Because her joy comes in feeding. Her joy comes in seeing the children enjoying. That's all. I guess she says, now I'm not hungry at all. So many ladies tell us, come on now, join us. Says, no, I'm not hungry, Swamiji. I'm already satisfied. Cooking and serving and seeing everybody enjoying is, you know, has given us so much satisfaction that she doesn't even need to eat. At least not for pleasure. She may need to eat to perhaps appease her hunger, but not for the sake of pleasure. Thus, every mother knows the joy of feeding, which is much more than the joy of eating. We used to tell you this story, you know. Our Bada Swami used to tell us the story of the battle between the devatas and asuras, the gods and demons, fighting well for a long time. And because of the intervention of some devatas, Brahmaji, etc., ultimately they decided to stop the battle and there was a truce between them. They declared truce. And they decided to enjoy the truce. So devatas were very generous. They invited all the demons, asuras, you come to heaven, we'll give you a great party. So the demons are very happy. They have never seen heaven. They would never get to ever see it. But now they're invited. And this is the Amarapuri, you know, Amaravati, in which there is Indra is the king. He has a garden. And all the tables are all set up and everything. You can imagine heaven, how it must be, you know. Tables are set up like this, all wonderful tablecloth, and then all the dishes and crockery and everything is set up. Food is being served. Announcement is made. Fellows, don't start attacking the food. Wait for everybody to be served before you start. Because the demons are used, as soon as it comes, they start gulping, you know. So stop it. Wait. So all of them are restrained from eating food. After food is served, so wait a minute. Before you start, you have to chant 15th chapter of Gita. So all right, come on now. Okay. The one final ritual is we perform. Remember that you are in the heaven and you have to follow the rules of the heaven. So the way we eat here is that, number one, we eat only with our right hand, not with left hand. Alright, now what next? So all of you stretch out your right arms. They brought the sticks, as long as the arms, long sticks, and the hands are all tied with the sticks. Now Brahma Arpanam Brahma Havi, you know, now you can start eating. And these fellows are just angry. So what do you mean? You invited us here to make fun of us or what? Because when your arm is tired, how can you bend your arm? How can you eat food? And you are not supposed to eat with left hand. So they were going to pull their swords and a battle would have emerged there. Fortunately, some old demon Asura said, quiet, calm down, calm down. There must be some reason, calm down. And then he had this bright idea. Said, it is true that you cannot bend and take food from your plate and put it in your mouth. You cannot do that. What can you do? You can take food from the plate of the other person who is across you and feed him. It's a great idea. They all jumped in joy. And that's how they started feeding each other. First time the demons got an opportunity to feed. And when you take a morsel of food, put in the mouth of the other person and see him enjoying it, that gives a great joy. They started pushing food to each other, you know. Come on, eat more. Come on. That's how they do in Gujarat, in Saurashtra, you know. They push food. After the whole feast is over, then the host comes out with another attendant. And he has a whole basket of laddus or sweets, you know, big pieces. Pushes in your mouth. So those people who know the method, they always leave some room in their stomach for this one. But otherwise, you know, they keep pushing these huge things in your mouth. Because there's a great joy in feeding. So today, the asuras or demons had twofold joy. Not only the joy of eating, but also the joy of feeding. First time they recognized. So that is why in life also, this is the simple rule. The joy that comes from making someone else happy is liberating. The happiness that comes from making someone else happy is liberating happiness. Happiness that comes by simply sense self-gratification. Gratifying myself is a binding happiness. I'm always seeking gratification. Sense gratification, emotional gratification, intellectual gratification, ego gratification. So depending on the personality of a person, the emphasis is, there are some people so sensuous that all that matters is sensuous gratification. Some people are very emotional, to them emotional gratification is most important. Some intellectually oriented people want intellectual satisfaction. Therefore, reading new things, knowing new things, traveling, seeing new things, that's their joy. Some are egoistic people, and most are, they want egoistic gratification. They want name and fame and recognition and power. That's what they want. That's what satisfies them. Thus, human being is constantly seeking self-gratification because that is his definition of happiness. When am I happy? When am I happy? When I am gratified. Always seeking self-gratification. And therefore, seeking to use every occasion, every opportunity for self-gratification. Not realizing that that is a process that binds me. Because more I seek gratification, more I need. You see, last night also, that process of seeking self-gratification is like pouring butter in the fire. And as you pour butter in the fire, fire becomes more demanding, and so also more you try to gratify yourself, more demanding it becomes. Meaning that it can never happen that you are forever satisfied by self-gratification. One can never be. That's what the whole world is doing. Not realizing the basic equation. Or how to gain true happiness, not realizing the only definition of happiness that we have is self-gratification. And unfortunately, therefore, we use our relationships also as a means of self-gratification. If both the persons do that, there is nothing but conflict. If one of them does it, other person gives him, at least there is less conflict. But then, the person who is to give in also has a sense of hurt within themselves. And therefore, this process of using a relationship as a means of self-gratification never works. That's what we have today, unfortunately. That's the only kind of happiness, I would most, not everybody. There are people who are enlightened people. There are people who are wise people. There are mature people. I cannot say that everybody is like that, but many people are like that. For whom the only agenda is self-gratification. There is so-called love in the beginning. But very often that love is also very superficial in as much as it is more physically oriented and it doesn't last too long. Ultimately, there is nothing left there. And so unless you really make an effort to relate to each other at a deeper level, it's all right to begin relationship with at a superficial level. Okay. But if we have the maturity, ultimately the purpose is to discover a deeper relationship, then that process will work. Otherwise, it does not work. The reason why we find so many relationships, just falling apart is only because there is no willingness to self-sacrifice. There's only willingness always to seeking, fulfilling one's own demands and not sacrificing one's demands. As long as you fulfill my demands, so long I'm happy. Otherwise, my way or highway. That's how it works. Because of that, you become less and less giving, less and less tolerant, more and more intolerant. And therefore, we find it difficult to sustain relationships. In India, as I said, there is no freedom, therefore the relationships continue. In the West, because there is a lot of freedom available, therefore it doesn't continue. But human being is essentially the same. And therefore, the basic rule in discovering freedom in relationship is that a relationship should become a means of gratifying the other one. Each one should have the commitment of deriving happiness by making the other person happy. A relationship which is characterized by a sense of contribution rather than a sense of being a consumer. Not a consumer, but a contributor. As Swami used to say, when somebody comes before me, my first thought is how to make this person happy. How to be useful to this person. Usually our thought is how to use that person. His thought is how to be useful to the person. That's all. If both the persons have this attitude, how to be useful to the person, then, but Swamiji, you know, I don't know how to be useful to that person. I just can't make that person happy. Regardless of what I do, the person doesn't become happy. It cannot be. It cannot be, because when you find by doing something doesn't become happy, do something else. Doesn't become happy, do something else. If you are committed to make the person happy, I'm sure they will find ways of making that person happy. By understanding the person, understanding their likes and dislikes, understanding their needs, understanding the requirements. Therefore, the basic rule, basic thing is, number one, that relationships are very valuable. Inasmuch as every relationship can be a means of great joy. That happens when I use the relationship as a means of self-growth. What is self-growth? Self-growth is characterized by freedom from likes and dislikes. So how do I measure my growth? The extent to which I become free from likes and dislikes. And the relationship gives me ample opportunity to do that. So this is my understanding of the purpose of relationship. It is to help me grow, help me become free. What is bondage? Bondage is being controlled by likes and dislikes. What is freedom? Freedom is becoming free from likes and dislikes. Thus, a relationship, if I relate in a mature way, then can become a means of progressively making me free from likes and dislikes, and thus creating inner freedom for myself. So, freedom in relationship, or freedom because of relationship. Not freedom from relationship, but freedom in relationship. How to discover the freedom while we are relating to others. We'll take a break here. Oh, we still have 2 more minutes to go. Yeah. Because this one tells me how many minutes have gone. So when we meet again, we'll examine some specific relationships that we come across in our life and see what are the dynamics involved in different kinds of relationships and how we can use each one of those relationships as means of our growth. An opportunity to contribute. Our Swami says, be a contributor. Transform yourself from being a consumer to a contributor. Where do I go to contribute? Start from where you are. So charity can begin at home. And therefore, we can start being contributors to our own people, which is where we are not. This fellow goes to the whole world and contributes. When it comes to his own family or home, you know, he has a hard time contributing. And the best is to begin, you know, from our own place. So charity begins at home. Maybe it's so difficult. I think closer we are, more difficult it is to contribute. I do not know. We'll see. But then that is where the contribution can begin. And that's where the foundation of happiness can also begin. Okay. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamada Yapurnameva Vashishyate
Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.